Call Sabatino. We're back with Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino. You know, Roland, a couple of weeks ago, we did a thing called The Best Times of Our Life. I asked the question, what is the best time? What was? Could not be just one. It could be a number of them. And I got a phone call from our listener, Gene from Staten Island. Gene wanted to tell me about the best time of her life, and I wanted to share it.
Okay.
Only because it was so interesting. She helped some years ago in Belize develop a hospital for the poor. And she spent 9 months down there literally building this series of shacks and putting them together with the floors and so on and so forth. And she wanted to tell me about, I wanted to try to get her on the show, but her and I have an agreement. I don't do broadcast, but I'll tell you the story. And she said it was the most extraordinary. This goes back now just after World War II. If you remember, Belize at that time, which for those of us, some who don't know, is in the Caribbean Sea or the Gulf of Mexico on the other side of the Yucatan Peninsula. And it is south of the Yucatan. All right. Magnificent country. Some of the last virgin forest left in that part of Central America. It's magnificent. And it's being protected as much as it can by just about every major organization in the world. Well, she was down there in 1947 and 48, long before we even got involved. And she wanted to say that it was the best time of her life. Those people were extraordinarily poor. They had nothing. But what they did have was a sense of commitment, a wonderful little church that they were very committed to. And It was, as she described the story, which I cannot, you know, I couldn't give it the kind of enthusiasm she gave to it. You could feel the excitement of her life. And that was wonderful. That was just marvelous.
Well, it's nice that she called, first of all, to want to share that.
Yes.
And it's to me, it's always nice to hear what somebody else has done in the past that makes them feel good.
That was how I felt about it. But I was amazed by her, after all these years, that's now over half a century ago.
Oh,
how
no.
she was a young woman. She said she was in her early 20s. She had and was candid enough to say she had flunked out of nursing school, so she didn't make it through nursing school, and she decided to do something, and she went out to do it. And she said, I wanted to do something. And she spoke to a priest at her local parish.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if you want to do something, I've got a fellow priest who has just taken on a mission in Belize. She had no idea even where the country was. And she said, I went down there and it was the best 9 months of my life. And I wanted to share that. I thought people would be interested in hearing that.
I think many people are always interested in hearing what other people do that makes them feel good, but also what they do for improving a social condition,
yes,
or even creating a positive attitude from some other people.
She made me feel good.
Yeah,
she made me feel good. Carl,
we've been doing this broadcast for a number of years.
Yes, we have
in different capacities.
Yes,
but Gene from Staten Island, you have always mentioned. Now, I'd like to meet this Gene from Staten Island sometime. I want to make sure that she's not a
figment of my imagination.
Yes, a figment of your imagination.
I've been telling it. When I did a local radio show, she was my caller at WSIA here in New York City. She was the caller in the morning. As soon as I sat down in the chair, and if I made a mistake, that was it. I mean, she was all over me like a bad dream. She said, did you hear what you just said? I said, what did I say? And she would tell me in detail. She says, you're a young man. You're going to do great in this business, but you're going to have to learn a few things. I said, okay. And she told me. And with that, we developed a relationship. Over the years, she followed me to Radio ASB, American Songbook Radio. She was there with me. The ChristmasChannel.com, when we did the Christmas stuff, the Christmas Eve Yule Log. She's always been there. What a remarkable woman. And Gene, if you'll be listening to this, we love you.
Well, you know, Carl, it's interesting. I mean, I've been in the radio business and television business for a number of years,
a number of decades. Yes.
My first started in 1958 at a small 1,000-watt daytime radio station in upstate New York. I was still in high school. My English teacher asked if I would go down and talk about the high school activities at the local radio station, which was a 1,000-watt daytimer. Listen, if you
three people were listening.
If you got out of the county, you were lucky, you know. But it was still a commercial radio station.
That's correct.
You know, and I had to learn all the things that one has to do to participate in the radio family. You had to learn how to take meter readings. You had to go get a license to make sure that you could do that legally. So many things like that. But I remember so many times as a very young man, I'm again now a high school student, saying certain things on the air that I would get a call saying, you know, are you an idiot or are you just acting like one? You
got to love those local stations.
Some of the things that I said were pretty stupid, and the double entendre and some of the things I never picked up on.
Yes.
As an innocent child,
right?
You know, a teenager at that time. And it was basically fun, but they were all learning experiences that led me to become far more professional as I moved through the profession throughout the years.
And not only has it changed, but you carry the mantle of that half century of extraordinary experience. You cannot, and you can, and it's on the air. You can actually hear it in people. I know I do. You can hear it when a man or a woman has that built-in experience, that sense of it comes out in their voice in almost everything they say, whether it be fun or intellectual or informational news or what have you. You can hear the difference. It's amazing how much you can hear the difference.
Well, you know, I've also noticed, too, from the time that we started doing our Smith Sabatino broadcast and what I used to do on the air as a newscaster, both in radio and television. The tonality of my voice changes when I interact with you in a conversational way than it did if I were delivering a newscast.
Yes. And that is the one thing, is that if there's only one thing that I find, and I actually had this conversation for a good friend of yours, Walter Cronkite.
True.
We actually had this conversation. I was at a party with him, and I asked him about the level of the voice. And he said it will change by the meter depending upon the environment that you are in.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
And that hit it right on the head. I got it. I wasn't there. He said, because you have to, because when he would be broadcasting from the field, which was Vietnam, okay, and I know you were with him at the time, his voice was that same competent, determined voice, but it had a different level to it.
You cannot be, as a reporter, in my opinion, dispassionate about what you're reporting on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you're standing next to a series of bodies for some kind of reason, you're not going to be ebullient.
Yes.
You're going to be subdued, very subdued, and rightfully so, I might add.
Yes.
The same thing was if I were reporting and did from various fields of conflict throughout the world, whatever you said had to be measured by what you were seeing.
Correct.
But also you have to be very careful not to extrapolate and to be, what I call it, more in either enthusiastic or more, I'm not coming up with the word. You got to be tuned in to what the feeling of that moment
and
is.
If I may try to find the words for you, your voice has to match what people are seeing.
That's correct.
You have to be in tune with that video picture that's going out.
Mm-hmm.
And in radio,
or just the audio.
Look at
Merle from London.
Oh, but I've actually listened to those broadcasts. You can go to the Broadcast Museum here and actually listen to them. They are stunning. They are so descriptive. It's amazing. You actually can see, and maybe you had the benefit because we actually have seen those pictures.
You know,
you can feel.
Can we legally run some of those on our?
Yes,
on
we
our
can.
Air?
Yes, we can.
Let's do that.
We should do that
because they're really great stuff. And when he said, "This is London."
They are in the public domain, and all we have to do is go to the museum and apply, just like anyone else, and you get copies of it, and they can be rerun. They just have the copyrights go back to the museum. That's all.
Yeah, but they must also be belong to CBS in some way.
I don't know if they, like, I remember this, the stuff that I gave up, where I had a lot of broadcast stuff, I gave up the rights to the museum. Songs, Judy Garland, Billie Holiday, and so on and so forth. I gave them up. We should talk about that. That's a very interesting concept.
Well, we are talking about it. Well, what do you mean we should talk
right,
about it?
Well, I want to get to about giving up the rights. It's a very interesting topic about giving your rights up and in perpetuity.
Well, that would be interesting because I don't recall ever doing that. I just know that when I was broadcasting for any network, they own the rights.
They own the rights. Well, we own our rights on Smith Sabatino, and here we are.
We do?
Yes, we do.
Oh.
Call Sabatino with Roland Smith, America Weekend, on the Envision Radio Networks as we continue on. Stay with us.
America Weekend. Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This swingman was traded for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar before ever playing in an NBA game. Although he was mostly a sixth man, the Milwaukee Bucks ended up retiring his number.
For the win. Fall away. Yes! At the buzzer, he does it!
So where is Junior Bridgman now? Junior's success in the food business has made him one of the wealthiest former NBA players. His company operates around 300 Wendy's and Chili's restaurants. Junior's also on the board of the PGA, Jackson Hewitt, and Fifth Third Bank. If all that isn't enough, he made time to shoot a TV commercial.
GE engineers found ways to cut my energy use. More efficient lighting helps us stay open later and serve more customers and make more profit.
And Junior Bridgman's found a way to make a lot of cash. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. With packages as low as $19.99 for 4 rooms, you can't go wrong. 888-759-MYTV.
Order in the court.
Do you watch professional football? This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Big John played football for the Chicago Bears. He was in the first year of a lucrative 2-year contract, but he was very unhappy. So after just 3 months with the Bears, Big John quit and went to the Miami Dolphins to play football. Now what happens? Can Big John legally be forced to play for the Chicago Bears? Or can he play for the Dolphins now that he's happy? Stay tuned for the final verdict. So can Big John be forced to play football for the Bears? No. But he may have to pay them damages for his breach of contract. Also, because he signed the contract with the Bears legally, he wouldn't be able to play a single down for the Dolphins. And that's the final verdict.